on ABC Local Radio, Radio Australia and the World Wide Web. This is Sunday Nights with John Cleary.
Hi there and welcome. Well, today in Brisbane marked the final formal chapter in a saga that's bemused many for months. Roman Catholic priest Father Peter Kennedy celebrated Mass with his congregation at St Mary's Church in South Brisbane for the last time today. Though not excommunicated, Father Kennedy has been removed from the parish for allowing so-called irregular practices to creep in. Father Kennedy and a large portion of his parish will worship together in the more secular precincts of the Trades and Labour Council from this week on. Well, in a few moments' time, we'll hear from Father Kennedy about the last day at St Mary's, but I would also like to take the opportunity of moving away from the particulars of South Brisbane this evening and place the discussion in a somewhat wider context, not just of the Catholic Church, but of the wider Christian community as it attempts to come to terms with as much upheaval in the past half century as it has experienced in the past half a millennium. The years since the 1960s have been ones of almost continual social and cultural change. For Catholics, the marker of Vatican II, the great council aimed at coming to terms with a modern world, marks the spot for good or ill. In Protestant churches, the issues are no less divisive, ranging from matters of doctrine and belief across to forms of worship and liturgy. In some places, it's even been termed the worship wars. And to cap it all, over recent years, the culture war of politics and right and left has further coloured the debate. Where in all of this does one find truth? With the local community and their assessment of what brings them closer to the divine? Or with the Church Universal and the creeds, doctrines and practices honed down and agreed over 2,000 years of cultural change? What are the reasonable boundaries between the essential core beliefs of the Church and the need for culturally appropriate flexibility in the structures of Church practice? Well, Peter Kennedy and others will join us in just a few moments' time. And if you'd like to, you can also participate in the conversation. We'll give you the number a little later on to call us and give us your 2 cents worth. In our second hour this evening, someone who has genuinely tested the boundaries of belief, Jane Stork. Jane is the author of Breaking the Spell, My Life as a Rajneeshi and the Long Journey Back to Freedom. You can hear Jane's remarkable story in conversation with our own Noel Debien after the news in about an hour's time. Then there's the Midnight Inquisition, some thoughts on the good life, and we bring it all together in the chat room this evening with Samina Yasmin, where, among other things, we might talk about the renewed debate on asylum seekers. Tell me, where in all of this is a refugee not a refugee? You can give us a call on that one too. But first, a tune. Here's Chris Christopherson from his album This Old Road with Pilgrim's Progress.
Am I young enough to believe in revolution? Am I strong enough to get down on my knees and pray? And am I high enough on the chain of evolution to respect myself in my own peculiar way?
A little reflection on a constant dilemma. Chris Christopherson there from an album released in 2006. This Old Road. And the song, Pilgrim's Progress, we'll put the details of that album up on our website, abc.net.au/Sunday Nights with an S. Chris Christopherson puts it in his own peculiar way. But today, Father Peter Kennedy celebrated his last Mass as the parish priest at St Mary's Church. He's been removed for pushing the boundaries a tad too far for those in charge. The situation is unique and painful for those at St Mary's, but one that's only too common in the history of a faith that claims to be both local, personal, and universal. Finding the boundaries between local sensitivity and universal coherence is a struggle that's been central to the continuing development of Christianity for much of the past 2,000 years. And to tease out some of the lessons from today's experience, we'll be joined shortly by some of those from the parish of St Mary's in Brisbane, including Karen Walsh and Kevin Marfan. Also, we'll be joined by Sister Marianne Confoy in our Melbourne studios and by Gary Eastman of John Garrett Publishing, who, among others, published Bishop Geoffrey Robinson's critique of the church last year. But first, it's good to welcome Father Peter Kennedy. Father Kennedy, thanks so much for joining us after what must be a very challenging and busy day for you.
It has, John. Yes, it's been a very tiring day, actually.
What, for you, did you take most significantly out of today?
I suppose it was just the overwhelming numbers of people that came to show the amazing support that they've been showing for months now. You know, John, there were people, like I met a family, one man came up from Melbourne, another came up from Canberra. They were brothers of a guy at St Mary's. We had Shane Howard come up from Melbourne to sing Murray Time tonight. Like, we just had so many people coming from places like Lismore and Cairns, and like, it just was indicative of the support. I don't know what that's about. I mean, I do, and I think I do.
Well, that's one of the interesting things, isn't it? Because the way this issue has resonated among folk around the church, even though they're not necessarily in tune with the specifics of the debate at St. Mary's, something has resonated. What do you think it is?
Well, I think it probably is the fact, you know, as I said today in the homily, that, like, we aren't going to change the church. And but maybe we're going to offer hope to so many Catholics who've been, like, rendered powerless by the church's doctrines and dogmas and rules and regulations. Like, I was sitting on the floor there tonight in the TLC building next to a couple, and, like, her husband was a priest, a scripture scholar, actually, and I was sitting next to both of them, and I said to her, "I haven't seen you for a long time," and she said, "No, you haven't, but I feel that what's happened here tonight had to happen, and you will see more of me now." Like, intimating that they were sick and tired of a church that was so much into regulations and rules and dogmas and doctrines under John Paul II and now under Benedict XVI, you know.
Just staying with your experience at St Mary's for the moment, if you look at today and what's coming out of today, what is it that you and your community hope to achieve by the stand you have taken? Because you didn't need, ultimately, to take it this far. You could have said, OK, well, look, on the points you want us to conform on, we will conform. But you've said, no, look, we've got to draw a line under this. So what is it you and the community of St Mary's are wanting to achieve by this stand?
I don't know if we want to achieve anything, in actual fact. I think we were just simply being true to our own integrity of what we had been. Like, many years ago, we began to sort of, like the bishops in Asia, in actual fact, began to be church in a different way, which was sort of what we understood as the spirit of Vatican II, really. But, you know, Vatican II was stillborn, thanks to John Paul II and Cardinal Ratzinger. It never got off the ground, really. But we did try to be. But when I said that to our Archbishop, he just said, "Filthy pride, filthy pride." But it wasn't pride on our part, you know. It was just trying to be church in that spirit of Vatican II. And so it wasn't about achieving anything. It was just being, trying to be church in a different way. And as Karen Walsh would indicate to you, like, out of our community came this anxiety, the desire to be of service to homeless and the poor in an inner city parish. And out of that came this great Project Micah, which is just, you know, became so much part of who we were.
There are many examples in church history of individuals or communities bringing their own insights into the practices and beliefs of the church. They've usually been resolved in one of three ways. First, the creation of a new group within the church that's also orthodox in belief, but with different emphasis in practice.
Mm-hmm.
Second, groups sort of ruled unorthodox and suppressed, some more heavily than others. And thirdly, groups that break away to form their own communities of faith. Now, there's a sense in which you're falling between the latter two. The problem is these groups either grow into new denominations, that is, they flower and multiply, or they die with the group of leaders that first took them out into the new terrain. Where do you see this going? I mean, you're moving off down to the Trades and Labour Council building, and I'll give you a home for as long as I guess you need it. But what do you see happening here, and what's the point of this exercise, taking it to this next step?
Well, I suppose, John, what we've been saying for the last 9 months or even longer than that, I guess, is that, like, the church is a sort of a monarchy, and it prides itself on that. But it does seem to many of us that it's impossible for a monarchy to make much sense or to be a player in liberal democracies that are in the first world today. So that's one aspect. I don't see how the church can continue to exist in liberal democracies. I mean, what's basic to democracies is, for example, that you're presumed innocent until you are judged guilty, found guilty. But that wasn't given to us at all. Like, we were just judged guilty, and there was no due process whereby it was tested whether these accusations were valid or not. And that's one point. The other point is, I think, that the Catholic Church continues, even though the Biblical Commission said in the 1980s that there was no reason why women cannot be become priests or actually become leaders within the Catholic community. Now, again, John Paul II and Benedict XVI is Ratzinger, Cardinal Ratzinger. They just stopped that in its tracks and said that there was no way the church could change that. Now, it just is crazy to think that women are excluded from leadership in the Catholic Church. So that's the other issue that we've been talking about. And I suppose what we have to do as a community now is to practice what we preach. So I'm not sure how we're going to develop as a community, which it'll unfold, but we have to sort of be serious about both those issues. We have to be much more democratic, and we have to be much more inclusive of women in leadership positions.
Are you saying that the institutional church, as far as you can see it, and I probably mean this not just about the Catholic Church, but the institutionalized church, whether it be Catholic, Anglican, Baptist, whatever denominations, but the church has hierarchy, is effectively dead?
Oh, I think so. Definitely in first world countries anyway. Definitely. Like Bishop Spong, the Anglican bishop, says, for example, that rigor mortis is too weak a term for the church in Europe, you know.
Yes.
Like, I think yes, exactly what you're saying, I agree.
Are you saying of the group in South Brisbane, essentially, we are church? That is, this is all the church that we need, that the concept of the church universal is in some ways irrelevant?
Well, I don't know whether it's irrelevant, but like I suppose, like, it's hard to understand how, like, we've been judged guilty mainly because of our liturgical practice.
Yes, and I haven't been speaking about liturgical practice at all.
No, but that's been what we've been found guilty
of. Yes, and one can understand the particulars and one can argue about the particulars, but there's something more than the particulars that are moving you here. There is something about your understanding of the church.
Yes, exactly. I mean, we would take the Second Vatican Council concept of the church as the people of God.
Yeah.
Now, our Archbishop, John Battersby, would see the church as a clerical club, really. And he really believes in the power and the office of the priest. And so liturgy is priest-centred, and we have developed a way of liturgy of being people-centred. Like of the liturgy, as the Second Vatican Council said, like liturgy has to be full active conscious participation by the people of God. And that, I think, you know, that concept and the way in which we've exercised liturgy for many years now at South Brisbane, keeping it under the radar, has meant that we have a very live and active and joyful and, you know, energetic community, because it's fallen into the hands of the people. Now, I'm not saying that's the only way to have Mass, but I mean, I still believe it's quite possible to have different understandings of liturgy. But why do we have this one sort of McDonaldization of the liturgy? Why can't we have different liturgical experiences depending on our culture and so forth?
You're on Sunday night on ABC Radio Around Australia. Our guest, Father Peter Kennedy of St Mary's Church in South Brisbane. Father Peter Kennedy, thanks so much for sharing your time with us. If you can, stay on the line for a few minutes more.
I will.
We'd like to bring some others into the conversation and just extend it out from the parameters that you've mentioned. You already have mentioned to us that some of your parishioners from South Brisbane are joining us in the studio. Karen Walsh. Karen, welcome to you.
Hello.
And Kevin Marfan. Kevin, good to have you with us.
Good evening.
We're joined in our Melbourne studio by Sister Marianne Confoy, or Dr. Marianne Confoy, of the Jesuit Theological College in Melbourne, and a member of the Sisters of Charity. Marianne, welcome to you.
Thanks, John.
And on the line also, we have from John Garrett Publishing, the group who published Geoffrey Robinson's book last year, Bishop Robinson Looking Critically at the Church, Gary Eastman. Gary, thank you for joining us.
Hello, John.
Well, Marianne, let me come to you first. Peter Kennedy has put some very strong observations on the line that resonate with many people, that somehow the Church has, to some extent, got out of touch with where large numbers of the faithful are these days, particularly those who are on the boundaries of the Church, on the fringes of the Church, and need to be held by an authentic local community. Do you recognise the resonances there?
I can understand something of the obvious pain of the Peter and of the community of St Mary's. As I haven't been privy to what has been happening there, and just listening to Peter's story just now, I guess there are some things that I don't agree with him about. But I don't want to make a comment on something that I don't know enough about in terms of the actualities.
Yes, and we can talk about the disagreements a little later on. Let's talk about, though, that general sense, the resonance, because it's something across, as I said in my introduction, across not just the Catholic Church, but wider, across many Protestant churches as well, this sense that the institutional church just is not where people are at these days.
But one of the interesting things for me is the way in which, as you described yourself, there is such an interesting energy alive amongst people who are taking up the battle and asking what, and some of these are informed responses and some of them are just unexamined opinions, it seems to me, in reading letters to the editor and hearing people's comments. But one of the interesting things is that people are alive. And when you say the Church, the clarity between the various understandings of the Church that we have. I'm reminded of an experience I had in the States when Cardinal Bernardine asked for dialogue and for common ground. And Cardinal Hickey and Cardinal Law said, there is no dialogue, we have the truth. Now, one of the wonderful things for me as an educator was to see cardinals disagreeing with each other, which made people sit and say, well, what do we believe? What can we believe? And if there is disagreement amongst the hierarchy, then how do we come to an understanding of truth ourselves? So that there is so much energy is important to me, that there is so much suffering and sadness that's another issue, and that's a matter that concerns me.
There can be energy within and disagreement within. There's room for rigorous internal disagreement, is what you're suggesting.
Yes.
Some would suggest that there are limits on that. But, and that brings us to another question and a tension that I'd like to get you to reflect on, and that is the tension between the need for local sensitivity at the periphery and the boundaries, and yet the need to preserve some sense of universality at the core. That is, that this is something that still has to be a one-size-fits-all at a certain extent if there's to be any sense of the church universal.
Yeah, and as long as we keep in talking in abstract, it becomes quite problematic. But one of the criticisms of the church, and I'd say this, the church at the local level, the church at the universal level, is the struggle with imagining the possible. I listened to an ABC radio television last night, and this guy, the commentator, was talking about we're in the age of the unthinkable now. Well, I think it's time for us to start imagining what is possible and how do we work together to enable the transformation of the church from the local level, from the communal level, people working at the grassroots. The conversation has to keep going and division has to be broken down because conversation can always be transformative. And the sad thing is when people get locked into certainties, locked into rigidity, and we push people into a corner that they can't get out of.
I'd like to bring in Karen Walsh and Kevin Marfan now. Speaking from your local experience, what excites you, Kevin, about being at St Mary's? And what has been the thing that's kept you there and kept you actively participating in a congregation that's essentially saying, well, we're going to head out on our own now?
Well, John, I think it's the sense of community that we get. I mean, my wife and I have been attending St Mary's on and off now for about 13 years. And I think it's just the... I wouldn't say I came from a particularly bad upbringing. I was brought up as a Catholic through the Catholic system. But what I found in St Mary's was, I suppose, the freedom to question my faith. I was asking a lot of questions through my teenage years about what it all meant. I suppose everyone does, and I just found the strict sort of doctrine approach of the Catholic Church of saying, well, this is how it is, just really wasn't appealing to me. Around the same time, I was also doing a lot of work in the social justice area. I was involved in an organisation called Rosie's Youth Mission that worked actively with street kids on the streets of Brisbane and the Gold Coast. So I think a lot of what the environment that Father Peter created at St Mary's and the community around that just allowed me to provided a safe haven for me to question, well, what does this all mean? And allowed me to sort of challenge my beliefs. And I think through that, actually... rather than actually weakening my beliefs, I believe it made my faith actually stronger.
Karen Walsh, what's your reason for hanging in there with St Mary's?
Oh, many reasons, but I think that we've been privileged as a community to live a possibility. We don't just have to talk about it. And finding that has been something that sort of has been very sustaining for me in all aspects of my life as a young person. As with Kevin, I was involved with youth homelessness. Then as, in my marriage, in my nurturing of my children, all those aspects of your life bring your faith into a different reality. And as Kevin said, we are free to explore that, but as laity, I think that I've enjoyed that it's not only the religious and the clerical and the academics, although, you know, there's plenty of those mixes at St Mary's and Catholics and Protestants and whatever we want to label ourselves, but the diversity of St Mary's is something that I have always loved. And I think that we have brought to life, you know, just by being a community that's been committed to the regular practice of weekly Mass, the vision of a world that is more socially just, a belief in human rights, the belief in the value of nurturing each other, looking after young children, looking after sick relatives, all those things come into the mix. Like, we all can't be out marching the streets every day, or we all can't just think about our family and not think about our world. Like, we, you know, your life has a rhythm depending on where you're at. So St. Mary's for me has been a constant companion in that rhythm of life. And the possibility that we experience there is a possibility of church that I expected to experience as an adult, because I was, you know, in youth ministry for years. I was privileged enough to, you know, have access to education around scripture and theology. And I, you know, I haven't always agreed with everything that I've been exposed to with that, but that opportunity to live it and to make it real is one that I've really valued, and I know many people in the community really value it. And watching each other go through those journeys over the years has been something that has constantly been, you know, sustaining and life-giving and challenging. It's not always that we agree with each other.
You're on Sunday nights on ABC Radio Around Australia. John Cleary with you. We're talking with members of the parish of St. Mary's in South Brisbane, including Father Peter Kennedy. Today was the last day that they shared Mass in St. Mary's, and they'll be moving to the Trades and Labour Council next week after a dispute with the church on matters of orthodoxy and belief. But our wider discussion is about the tension between the need for local sensitivity and universal order that that most churches have to grapple with if they believe in a theologically coherent faith. On the line also we have from John Garrett Publishing, Gary Eastman. Gary Eastman, thanks for joining us.
Good, John.
Gary, you're somebody whose active work as a publisher is involved publishing some fairly critical documents about the church. As a publisher, is this tension I've been mentioning, this tension between the universal and the local, and this need to somehow question the institutional rigidities of the church, something that you notice as a publisher is a consistent theme in material over recent years?
I think people are beginning to evaluate really just where the local church stands in just what sort of improvisation the local church can do. And I think people are also facing up to the problem that in the Western world anyhow, church attendance is just dropping away completely. And so that we have a situation in Australia where only 13% of Catholics attend Mass regularly. Now, I don't know the details of what's happening at St. Mary's, but I understand that there's a significant attendance and that the people who come, whereas most people who attend local parishes are over 50, I understand there's a really good spread of population. So what I see that St. Mary's has been trying to do, and there are many other parishes around Australia exactly like St. Mary's. I mean, when you talk about what's happened at St. Mary's to other priests and around the place, they say, well, gee, thank heavens nobody's dobbed me in, you know. Or it's just extraordinary that over the years I've done many things that Peter Kennedy has been accused of doing, but nobody has dobbed me in. So I think there's a search going on at the local level in many, many places to try and find a way of communicating the message of Jesus Christ to people much more effectively. And I think the difficulty we have at the moment with what's happening in Rome is that Rome is not open to that. Rome is really, at the moment, going backwards in terms of reiterating, particularly in the celebration of the liturgy, a previous era. And that's sort of spelled out by sort of quite unilateral appointments that have been made, which have really determined the outcomes. There's no consultation going on at all. in not just liturgy, but in a whole range of issues.
Father Peter Kennedy, do you see any need at all to be part of the Church Universal and to preserve a core of a core deposit of faith that needs to be consistent, and that's something that the Catholic Church shares through the creeds, basically, with most of the mainline Protestant churches?
John, I think that that one of the things the Church will have to do is to face... I mean, Vatican II didn't face the doctrines and dogmas of the Church. It was opening up the Church to the modern world. The Church is going to need to face those doctrines and dogmas. I mean, how do we talk about the Creed, for example, the Nicene Creed, in today's world, you know? How do we talk about the divinity of Christ? How do we talk about the virgin birth? Like, we live in such a different world. We have to somehow re-theologize. I'm not sure of the words here, but we have to look at those doctrines and dogmas. We seem to be stuck in them. Like, you have Benedict XVI saying now, and he said it as Ratzinger too, to the bishops of Asia, that they had to go into Asia and they had to say that Jesus was the one mediator of all mankind. And the same with the Church, is the one true Church. Like, the bishops of Asia, after the Vatican Council, like, they went back to be Church in a new way, and they identified with the poorest of the poor in Asia, Asia being basically a Buddhist or non-Christian society.
Yes, but Peter Kennedy, there's many churches and many Catholics able to identify with the poorest of the poor without becoming theologically heterodox, if you know what I mean.
Yes, John, but the Church can't be a player in places like Asia if they're insisting that Jesus is the one mediator.
I'll get Marianne Confoy to comment on that, Marianne, because there has been an ongoing discussion about these things for years. But at some point, with the best of all possible worlds, you still have to say, at some point, we do need to have some recollection or some reconnection to our commonality.
There does need to be a reconnection with our commonality. But as I was listening to you, one of the things that I was thinking of is, it's one thing to have a creed, it's another thing to know the creed, it's another thing to understand it. And one of the things one of the problems I think we face is that we've got vigilantes of certainty, people who think that they have the certain understanding of the faith because they know what they think the faith is, and they're vigilant to find out.
And these are on both the right. These are on both the right and the left.
Well, I think it's more in the rigidity side, right. And they're the ones who are frightened if there's anything that's non-conformist in terms of their understanding of what the faith is and how it should be celebrated and what way the presence of God can be understood in the midst of the community. So this is a real problem. And again, we live, as you've said, in a world that's much larger. So we've got to take the whole interfaith world into account. How do we speak to one another across our differences, and how do we tap into the core that is the centre of our searching, and the searching taking shape across different belief systems?
The peace that's been disturbed at St. Mary's and the disruption has been, and to pick up Mary Ann's point, has, from the perspective of the congregation, and you can tell me, Karen and Kevin, whether or not there has been a feeling that in some ways St. Mary's was betrayed a bit. That is, somebody dobbed you in, as the saying goes.
Oh, definitely. I mean, basically, we weren't trying to say we were rigid about our life as a community, our liturgy. In actual fact, it was something that would emerge and change with what was happening in the world, what was happening in the life of the community. The dobbing in is what most people do feel betrayed to. There's been no dialogue with the community. The community constantly wrote to the Archbishop and asked for him to come and visit the community to dialogue with us. We've been referred to as a people with no faith. There's been no dialogue about our faith. There's this assumption that we think we're better than everybody else when we've never indicated that at all. In fact, we were really happy just being ourselves in South Brisbane. We weren't really going out there to conquer the world. And it was that was disrupted, and it was like a bulldozer just coming through what was precious and sacred and what we expected to be there. You know, people today leaving the church were thinking about, you know, where will they be now buried from, or where will their children get married? I mean, I was standing next to a young person who said, I thought I'd marry in this church with Peter Kennedy or with the community around me or with whoever was going to be here in the future. So those things were shattered by a person who wasn't a member of the community making a lot of assumptions about a statue, making assumptions that we were somehow honouring this statue. The issues that just rolled on from there, which are too many to really go into, but it was definitely a betrayal. And the church hierarchy has betrayed us by not even valuing us as lay people, and has certainly been a misuse of power.
Peter Kennedy, I don't want to sort of belabor this, but there were specific charges, if we're getting into this dobbing in business, that you were altering the Mass in a way which was substantial and changing the sacrament of baptism in a way which was substantial and, in a sense, took yourself out of communion with the Church.
Well, John, that's not true, you know. That, like as Eric Hodgins, a priest in Melbourne, said at the time, like he said, like people come to Mass at St. Mary's because it's a Catholic church and a Catholic Mass. And he said people come to have their children baptised and they come along and have a Catholic baptism. Like he said, it simply is the duck test. Like if it looks like a duck, quacks like a duck, walks like a duck, it's a duck. And I mean, and Eric is 71. He's written a very good essay.
It's on new evangelism, isn't it, for the 21st
century? Yeah, wonderful essay. And I mean, I've known Eric for some years. And I value that man. And I mean, he just puts it succinctly. I mean, we use the words creator, redeemer, sustainer of life. But when we were, when the Archbishop said publicly that our baptism were invalid, and he actually said, nothing is so bad as a child crying out for justice from God. Now, like Eric said one time recently, like that once upon a time, once he remembers baptizing a baby saying, I absolve you from your sins in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. And he asked the rhetorical question, was that baptism invalid? Well, of course it wasn't invalid. The intention was to baptize the child. Now, John Battersby would argue against that, and Rome backed him up under Benedict XVI last year. They said, too, that was invalid. Now, I would believe that many theologians and many priests and many bishops would just disagree with that statement.
Mary-Ann Conroy, this takes us to the heart of the dilemma faced by many groups, such as St. Mary's, that by tinkering with certain words, you'll offend some and not offend others, and ultimately somebody makes a ruling.
Yeah, and this is where I see the whole task as an educating task of the Church. You've got people who are locked into one understanding, and also you've got the problem of the multiplicity of languages across. You know, what's an issue for the English language isn't an issue for the German language. The way in which we a word which is gender exclusive is gender isn't an issue across other languages. We've got to educate people so that they can hear the things that are able to be changed and the things that are at the core. Our problem is that sometimes we're focusing at the external level and calling that the core level.
There are ways in which St. Mary's, and you can answer this for yourself, Peter Kennedy, have been a little bit cheeky in that the Church does not permit women to give the homily, and traditionally many women have spoken in Catholic churches over the years by simply having a word at an appropriate moment. Yet you've chosen to actually allow women to formally deliver the homily. Now that's actually taking up a cudgel, is it not?
Well, it's challenging that structure, John, that says that women have no place in leadership in the Catholic Church. Yeah. And I mean, the Biblical Commission in the 1980s said there was no reason why women should not be ordained.
All right, I'll just get Mary Ann Comfort to comment on that one, just on that point, Mary Ann.
In what way?
About the idea that, well, you can at least, women have been allowed to speak in churches for a long time. It's just that St. Mary's have actually taken it a step further by allowing women to deliver the homily, which puts them out of order.
Well, let me come back a step. I think women have been exercising leadership. I think women continue to exercise leadership in terms of understanding the priesthood and in terms of ordination of women to the priesthood. Because people were taught so much and taught in a way that was linear, I think it's out of their capacity to understand how there can be any change in the church's understanding. And it's the equivalent of there were people who couldn't think that the church could exist without slaves. The church is transforming. God's revelation is making itself known in the experience of people. We're struggling. We have to be patient. We have to learn how to work together, because there are such diversities within the Roman Catholic Church itself. Mm. So how do we communicate across our differences in such a way that we can work together? How can we have the conversation that Peter and the people from St. Mary's are looking for, so that we are open to each other and really transformation can take place as a consequence?
That raises an important point, and I'd like you all to participate in this conversation now. Just feel free to roll in as you wish. But I'll ask Peter Eastman first, Gary Eastman rather, first. Gary, your publishing enterprise is really about this, isn't it? It's about a conversation within the church and keeping a conversation going, fostering a conversation.
Well, that's exactly it. And it's a case of really finding out what the key issues are that people want to talk about. And at the moment, we see with what's happened at St. Mary's, it's really just brought to the surface the general question of where do we go in the church at the moment, and the question of evangelization. And you've referred to the Peter referred to the article essay by Eric Hodgins that sort of tries to look at the whole talk of new evangelization within the Catholic Church and ask the question, is the way that this is being conducted at the moment through World Youth Days and other ventures as such, is that the most appropriate way, or do we need to really look at coming up with a whole new worldview of what it is to be a Catholic today? I think it's like in politics, there isn't actually a market for the more conservative side of things, you know. There's only a market for books which actually sort of raise new issues and new questions. The problem we have, which Geoffrey Robinson refers to in the introduction to his book, is that people are afraid. I mean, Geoffrey says, oh, look, I'd like to thank a whole lot of people who read this manuscript for me and who helped me with it. Unfortunately, they cannot be named. And that's with the problem we have at the moment is that despite the fact that we talk in terms of do not be afraid, we're terrified of letting the Spirit free. And so people are afraid, particularly if they're in positions within the church, they're afraid to speak out because they will lose those positions as such. And that's the real sadness of the situation at the moment.
Karen and Kevin, have you any observations from your local level? How do you feel about departing from the communion of the Catholic Church generally?
Well, I don't actually see myself departing from the communion of the Catholic Church, John. Like I said before, I mean, I was raised a Catholic. I fully intend on bringing my children up in the Catholic system until such time as they're old enough to make their own choices about their faith. So I think St. Mary's will continue to play a role in our family life. I'm also...
And in the wider church?
I think so. Look, I'm also involved in my local parish, where I hope my children can attend the local Catholic primary school. That's always been the case even before this whole situation blew up, because obviously St. Mary's doesn't have a primary school attached to it. But I see that St Mary's is will continue to nurture our faith, which we can also continue to exercise jointly with our other parish.
And Karen, do you continue to see yourself as part of the wider church?
I'm probably more conflicted than Kevin. certainly, you know, I don't think there's any need for more talking about equality for women in the church. It's just something that, you know,
you just get on and do.
You just get on and do it. I mean, the church hasn't fallen down. People haven't felt that their faith's been insulted because women have given homilies. In fact, you know, both women and men, laymen, men who have left priesthood, there's been a tremendous richness in laity sharing their faith experience and wisdom.
What about the comment by Mary Ann, the need to keep together, to keep the discussion going, that you can fight this out internally?
Well, I've been around for 51 years and I haven't noticed that it's sort of getting any better to have a conversation internally. In actual fact, we couldn't even get at the same table with the leader of our diocese, and I think that's the case in many places, and many wonderful women who have been involved in calling for ordination of women have given up with it because they've been marginalised. They've been told to that, you know, the time for talking, you know, just has been wiped away. People aren't at the table anymore. People have left the church.
Mary Ann, do you see this as something that is going to, that there is an inevitability about this discussion getting wider, that people will begin to actually just walk away? I mean, many have. Part of the discussion has been sponsored by those people who think that the church is declining in numbers and they just have to sort of either do their own thing or walk away.
There are people who are walking away and there are people who are coming into the church, and the people, and there's a great variety of reasons for people taking either of those actions. But one of the things that strikes me, and again, it's in relationship to Vatican II, I don't think it was stillborn. I think Vatican II is alive. I think the story of Vatican II is still being told, and I think the story of St Mary's is still being told. And we're working together, and it's interesting the way you used that clip from Chris Christopherson and the Pilgrim's Progress. One of the characters in Pilgrim's Progress that I really love is Mr. Standfast. And I think people are standing fast in a variety of ways and moving along at the same time. There are changes that are taking place. Gary's a man who gives us an extraordinary example of that in terms of the story of his own publishing career and commitment. So I do see transformation taking place. I do see the life of the Spirit in a lot of both the conflictual things and the experience of compassion and understanding that are coming out of that. And those people who came to St. Mary's, those people who came and celebrated with Peter and with the community, think it's impossible to look at one facet of the multifaceted diamond that is the experience of church, that is the experience of churches in conversation with each other as well as in conflict with each other, because the conflict can bring about new energy, new life, new possibilities.
That freedom to question seems John, to be at the centre of this, Peter.
Yeah, John, could I come in?
Yes, briefly.
Just quickly to say that there's lots of negative things happening within the church at the moment, particularly at the institutional level, and it's in the news every day. But I'm down here in South Gippsland at the moment. I went to the Easter Vigil at the Catholic Church at Foster, and it was just a wonderful event, which people with hardly any resources whatsoever managed to provide a sort of a really meaningful Easter liturgy with all of the ceremony and ritual that goes with it. So on that level, I see that you'll never turn the clock back in terms of the participation of ordinary lay people in those events. In fact, it has to be ordinary lay people because there was no priest. There was an 80-year-old priest came in who was unprepared, who had to sort of do the Eucharist as such. And that's happening more and more, and that's the real sign of hope that I see within the church at the moment.
And Peter Kennedy, I guess this for you, is really an act in which, you can tell me, are you leaving the church, or has the church left you, in a sense?
Well, the Archbishop says we've left the church, but we would disagree with him. I think what Gary's saying is significant, you see. Like, the priest was 80 or something, and he did the Eucharist, but it was the people that made that liturgy come alive. And that's exactly what you can say about St. Mary's. Both Terry Fitzpatrick and myself, we try to move to the side. We've asked the people to come to the centre of the liturgy. And that's what happens. And that's why it's so wonderful and energetic, because it is not priest-centred. And that's what Gary's sort of saying, that was his experience over Easter. Once it falls into the hands of the people, like, it's a great thing about women who begin our liturgy, and men too, but when women actually begin our liturgy on a Sunday morning and ask families to stand up with their babies who are to be baptised, like, they do it in a way that I could never do it. Like, and that just makes all the difference.
You're on Sunday Night on ABC Radio. Our guests this evening have been Karen Walsh and Kevin Marfan from the community at St Mary's Parish in South Brisbane. Sister Mary-Anne Confoy of the Jesuit Theological College in Melbourne, a member of the Sisters of Charity. And also Gary Eastman of John Garrett Publishing, a publishing house that's looked after many of the discussions in the church over recent days. Mary-Anne Confoy, thank you for joining us so much.
Thanks, John.
To Karen Walsh and Kevin Marfan, thank you. To Gary Eastman, thank you.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
Father Peter Kennedy, yes, you'll John. Take up your duties as the parish priest to the TLC next Sunday.
No, St. Mary's in exile.
St. Mary's in exile. There's a formal name of the parish. St. That's Mary's it. In exile, South Brisbane, or Brisbane City, actually, it'd be. You've been on Sunday Night on ABC Radio. We'll be back after the news with a look at a journey of faith in and out of the Rajneesh community. Thank you for joining us. Join us in the chat room and pick up some of these themes later in the evening on Sunday Nights.